what drives you, because what drives you would actually lead to your investment. So understand what really drives you, what motivates you, and that in of itself, everything else flows.
So today on C-Level, I have a really good friend of mine, Dagus Wright. He is the Chief Investment Officer at Decatur Capital Management. Dagus, welcome, man.
Great. Thank you, Chris, for having me. I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Oh, this is going to be exciting. I mean, we get a lot of people, obviously entrepreneurs, CEOs, but investors that watch the show. So today we're going to be talking about investing. We're talking about different asset classes, wealth management, a whole bunch of good information we're going to share in this episode. Before we get into that, I'd love to get a little, even though we've been friends for a while, I know your background, but for my audience, giving a little bit of background and then also talk about that painting behind you.
Wow, Chris. Okay, so first of all, Decatur Capital Management, what we focus on is building sustainable generational wealth for our clients, our families, and also the community. That's what we're focused on, and we get to do that and work with some great clients. And so the painting in the background is a original Dagus Wright painting, watercolor, and it's something that I really enjoy, and I get to share with you, the viewer, to see some of my work. But yes, I really enjoy painting, and it's something I've been doing ever since I can remember. I've been holding a crayon in my hand, so.
So for our audience that's listening, not watching, so it's a great like portrait, I guess, if you will, of someone golfing. But you call it, what's the name of it?
Yeah, so it's a, okay, so I'm on, if for those obviously that can't see the visual, just imagine that you're on that first tee. And you're starting to address the ball, and you do your swing, and you're looking off in the distance, and you're watching the ball. And what this rendering is called drive, because that's that drive that you obviously hit the ball, but it also talks about the inner drive that we all have, and we're looking off in the distance to really connect with that drive. What connects us? What pushes us? And so that's why the name Drive is very fitting.
Love that. Love that. That's so cool. Yeah, it's great work too.
Thank you.
Talk to me a little bit about how you started the company. How'd you get to where you're at? What are you working on right now?
So we started the company back in 2000. And one of the things that we identified, and I go back to that generational wealth comment, is that we saw the need for companies to address that real question. How will a client generate wealth? And that could be what we refer to as institutional client, a public pension plan that we get to work with the individuals that benefit from that pension, growing that generational wealth. We get to work with individuals, families that want to transfer the wealth of the family today till tomorrow. And I wanted to be a part of starting something entrepreneurial, because my background is that one of the first things I did out, as you know, that I've served in the military, graduated from the United States Military Academy at West Point, served as a captain in the Army. After that service, went on to work for a consulting company. Is the first position I had. And part of that consulting company, we looked at business formation in the minority community, in the Black community particularly. And I saw that there was a lack of entrepreneurs because of things that we were not allowed to participate in as it relates to forming businesses. And so that planted the seed of what would later become Decatur Capital Management. And that was the seed of trying to be an entrepreneur, to work in the community and to set that example and to represent what it means to be an entrepreneur. And so that was the driver. I matched that desire to be an entrepreneur with my technical skills. I'm good at math. And so
I don't know your numbers in your position.
Right. And so I said, well, I have math. I actually majored in math at West Point. I went on to University of Texas at El Paso and earned a Master of Science degree in economics. So when we marry the math and the economics, we came out with finance. I went on to Marta the public transit agency in Atlanta, and started out as a budget analyst and eventually became the treasurer of the of MARTA, and also ran the IT technology department. And so with that, with the concept and the view of starting that firm, we left the public transit agency in 2000 and launched what would later become Decatur Capital Management, with the focus on building that generational wealth for clients, be they benefiting from a pension plan or a family wealth, and also setting up a way of working with within the community. And we can talk a little bit more about that as we talk about the intern program that we have. But all that's part of what makes Decatur Capital.
So I love that. And I love your heart behind helping other people build generational wealth. And you know, this has always been something that, like, why are we not, I went to public school. So why is this not taught in public school? Why isn't there more focus on finance? I always question that, because it's so important in life, at least, you know, in a lot of the schools that are out there. And I think understanding, you know, finance, and people don't even know, like, how money is printed and all this other stuff. And so what are your views on like financial literacy?
Financial literacy is very important, because when we start breaking this down, right now, today, there's 21 states that require a high school student to pass a financial literacy course during their time in high school. Mm-hmm. 21 states, and that's, so is that enough? What we found is that it's really not enough, because financial literacy teaches, as you said, Chris, the basics. How do you budget? How do you avoid debt? And if a student understands that early enough, they can start making, have practices in place. And what's very important, because what happens when if a student goes to college, that as a college student, that's the first time you get that letter in the mail from that credit card company asking you to open up that first credit account.
Right.
And if they haven't been taught how to manage money, as we all know, a college student would go out and just spend it. Mm-hmm. And then they're getting into debt. And so what financial literacy can do is to really teach a student, and we really focus on typically high school and in college, really sharing with them a few things that would actually help them be more successful later in life. So we feel that financial literacy is very important. You know, I get opportunity to serve on the Atlanta Society Foundation of Investment and Professionals, and we're able to focus on working with not only college students, but also we have a partnership with the BSA Scouting Organization. They have incorporated financial literacy into one of their merit badges, and we're working with both the boys and the girls in that in those scouting programs to introduce this to them. So we're starting really in high school talking about financial literacy.
It's so important. It really is. And you know, especially, you know, the people that weren't born into wealth, right? You know, you've got generations that are taught incorrectly, and that kind of gets passed down. And at some point, there's got to be that education that comes in to kind of change that mindset, to look at money differently. Like, you know, like I didn't come from wealth at all. Like we were very poor, and you know, like, it's just crazy. Like my mother, like, she just has a fear of money. Like, it's crazy. You just don't understand. When you finally can be taught and educated that money is a tool, right? Money is it's a tool, and you can use that to build wealth if using properly, you know? And so I think that's something that we really need in this country is more of that education at an early age to kind of break that mindset to get people to start investing and using their money properly.
Well, you know, one of the first things that we teach as it relates to financial literacy invest in you. And that goes into the education process, because if you as a student, and Chris, you made up a really good point there, in that you don't have to come from wealth to really understand and have a need for financial literacy, because day one, you can start investing in your own education. And then we talk about invest for you. And that gets into the different investments that you can get involved with. But the very first thing that we want students to understand is investing in you, in your education and your knowledge base is always the first step.
I mean, it's up here. Use your mind. You know, I a big fan of Robert Kiyosaki, and he talks about his rich dad, poor dad, right? And one of his rich dad, one of the things his rich dad used to say was, use your mind, focus on this, build this to become wealthy, you know? And so I always thought of that. I'm like, you know, just keep educating yourself, learning about wealth.
Exactly. And so what we, and one of the things that we also work on is that we have an intern program. And that intern program has been in existence. We started that because once we got into the industry, we realized that there was not a lot of representation of a very diverse pool of people in the investment industry. So in 2002, we started a intern program partnering with several of the colleges. And some of those colleges are Georgia State University, Morehouse College, Spelman, Clark Atlanta, Adams Scott, Emory, even University of North Carolina. So we partnered with a lot of schools. And with that, we've been able to work with some really outstanding interns. You know, we've had interns that went on to become White House fellows, to become attorneys, individuals in the finance industry. And it's always rewarding for me when I have a student that, or a former student, check in with us and let us know what they're doing. Just last week, I received a call from one of our recent interns, and she informed me that she was able to get a position with a very nice, large bank. And she said, this is what I've always worked towards, of getting opportunity like this. And I want to thank you for the internship, because that really opened my eyes of what possibly I could accomplish.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, it's always good to bring people up, you know, and help as many people as you can. It's the best way of obviously building a business, but it's that feeling inside, you know, is giving back. And so that's really, really cool. So let's kind of shift gears a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about, let's talk about the market. Let's talk about what's going on. I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, now, you know, we've been through COVID, but now we've got a lot of stuff going on with the COVID variant and all, and threaten the potential another shutdown or whatever it is. How do you see that impacting the market overall?
Yeah, so if we look at the COVID variant, we feel that it may slow down the reopening, but it's not going to stop reopening. If you go out to any public place now, no one's wearing masks, and everybody just wants to get out and to reconnect. Mm-hmm. So we don't see the variants stopping the reopening. Mm-hmm. And so what we would say to our clients is continue to be in the market. We're seeing that there could be some bumpiness. What I mean by bumpiness, the market could be choppy, go up and down a little bit. But at the end of the day, we're seeing the market from these levels go up another 5 to 10% by the end of the year, because this is different from any other time except for, say, post-World War II, when we have completely shut down the economy during the pandemic. We have reopened the economy. When the economy was shut down, people saved money, and corporations cut costs. As we reopen, there's pent-up demand. You know, that's why we're seeing all these restaurants packed. Yeah. You know, we see corporations buying materials, buying products, and that's generating, obviously, more growth for the companies. And so now we're moving to a part where their earnings are exceeding expectations. If you look at this last announcement period, you have companies exceeding earnings expectations by 85%, the majority, also in revenue. So companies are exceeding expectations because of all the pent-up demand. And so what we're seeing is that this is what is really fueling the market. And also there could be discussion around, well, why are interest rates so low?
Mm-hmm. That was gonna be my next question.
Given all the, you know, the what we call the transitory inflation. What we're seeing is that the United States is still the safe harbor for the world. So we have other countries buying our treasury notes and bills. They're driving, they're buying more of these various treasuries, it pushes down the yield. So that's why we went from a 1.7% yield 10-year down to a 1.25, because there's so much buying of treasuries globally. Also, banks are buying more treasuries. So that also pushes down the yield on treasuries. And so what this also tells us is that the economy is not overheating. And so that's what keeps that the treasury yield, 10-year yield down to 1.25. And so, which means that the markets are going to continue to do well. And as we get into different aspects of the market, we can see that happening right now.
So when the interest rates are low, in your opinion, I mean, is it good for the market? Is it bad for the market? Or what would you say?
Yeah, so if the interest rates remain low, and what's really the driver is the level of interest rates is important, but it's also the rate of change. And so if the rate of change really accelerates, that would be bad for the market. And, you know, when we went from back in March, we went from 1.3 up to 1.7 in that period. What really hurt the market was how quickly that occurred, the rate of change. As we come back down now to about 1.25, the overall 10-year treasury could get up to 1.3, 1.4. But if that's done gradually, it has a less of an impact on markets. So to answer your question, low rates is typically a good sign for the overall market.
Interesting. So what advice would you have for some families that are you know, looking, that are invested, say, in a stock or something like that? What would you advise them on, like, kind of risk management and whatnot?
Right. So example, we work with a client right now that has a lot of their wealth tied into one stock that's been in the family for generations, well-known stock. Mm-hmm. There's a feeling within the family that they do not want to sell this stock because it has meant so much to the family. And so what we would do with that type of situation is that we would say, well, why don't we write what's called writing calls? And writing calls, you receive a premium for owning the stock, and you receive this premium. And what you could do then is that you could actually add to the overall income that you're generating from the stock with this additional premium. And that premium could be anywhere from 2 to 3% in additional yield. And so you still get to hold the stock, but you what's called write calls, and you receive a premium, and that premium will be 2 to 3%. If there's a feeling that if you don't want the stock to go down significantly, you can even put on what's called buying a put, which creates a floor for the company stock. And so these are ways that you can manage a what's referred to as a concentrated stock position and still generate income for the client.
Interesting. So they don't have to sell the stock and they can still make yield on it.
Exactly.
Interesting. One of the other things, and this is just obviously a huge topic, is in the news every which way you look, and I'm a big proponent of cryptocurrency. So I wanted to kind of touch on that and you being in finance, kind of get your take. So give me your overall thoughts. We'll start here. Give me your overall thoughts on crypto.
Okay. So first of all, we would say that crypto, it still may be early because what's happening is that we're seeing this a lot in more of the actual nations are looking at, should they regulate cryptocurrency? Mm-hmm. And that's why you saw the pullback from Bitcoin from 60,000 down to 30,000, because there was a fear of regulation. There's been a lot of talk, even in the US, about the US identifying or maybe developing their own cryptocurrency. and which obviously will impact Bitcoin. So we feel that this is early in the cycle for a new cryptocurrency. And what we would say, if we want to invest in cryptocurrency today, we would advise clients to look at a profitable, publicly traded company. And you have several. You have the credit card companies, you have the payment processing companies, and you even have regional, even have some of the banks getting into cryptocurrency and putting that as part of their business model.
See, I think it's important for people to understand, especially if you're new to cryptocurrency, is understanding exactly what it is, because there's still people that think it's a scam and all this other stuff. And so you have different classes, like Bitcoin is primarily going to be finance, but you actually have these other cryptos like Ethereum and Cardano and some of these other ones that are actual functioning companies. They serve a purpose, right? And there's technology behind this platform that is supporting the entire blockchain community. And I think looking at those as like businesses, right? Those are businesses that you know, are you're kind of putting your money into. And so I think that's the biggest thing that people kind of need to understand when they're evaluating, you know, where to invest their money. I think, and you mentioned that there was a lot of stuff like regulation and stuff. I mean, I think we saw the price of Bitcoin go down from 60 to 40 or wherever now 30 something as of this morning, 37, I think we're at now at the time of this recording, because that could change in a couple hours, right? But I think the reason why it fell was because a lot of the China FUD that happened and the China ban, essentially. But I don't, in my opinion, I don't necessarily think that that's bad for it, because that means that there's going to be more moving to the U.S. For Bitcoin mining and stuff like that. Of course, with Elon Musk, you know, he put out, you know, a tweet about you know, the energy consumption, all this other stuff, which obviously didn't help. So there's a lot of stuff that makes it very volatile. And I agree with you. I think it is might be a little bit early for some people, but the thing is, you know, if you get it, there is still, I think, an opportunity here. You know, just my biggest thing is people need to research what they're investing in, because you've got some of these other things like Dogecoin, and not that I'm against Dogecoin, but you got to understand exactly what it is. It started out as a joke, right? And so it is some sort of investment class. I don't know what you would call it, but you know, that there is something there. I just think that instead of people just throwing their money in, not knowing what they're doing, they should seek advice for somebody, you know, like somebody like you, that can kind of advise them and navigate some of these waters, because it is very volatile.
Well, exactly. And so there's a couple of things. One is, Chris, you mentioned this, blockchain. Now that's a different discussion, because there's a lot of value around the blockchain. And this is where we see the real benefit of the cryptocurrency along with blockchain, because the blockchain use would then say that you can actually track items, yes, digitally across various platforms.
Yep.
And that's the real strength that we see developing along with the blockchain. So we see that as the real value. And as it relates now, if someone really wants to invest in Bitcoin, our recommendation is to go with a profitable public traded company. That's the first that thing that we would say. You have to remember that you're really, at this point in 2021, you're really more, this is more of a speculative investment. And so you have to then be sure that you're not putting any assets that you cannot lose. Mm-hmm. And when I say lose, go down to zero.
Zero, yeah. Yeah.
You have to be prepared for that. And that's what we would advise anyone looking at this investment, is to have that awareness.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you mentioned, because you've got Bitcoin and then blockchain. Blockchain is a technology. And I think what we're kind of alluding to is smart contracts. This is the reason why I'm pretty bullish on Ethereum, is because that's what it's based on. And again, my opinion, I truly do believe that this is internet 2.0, I believe that this is going to be the future, where transactions between two individuals are going to take place on the blockchain. You know, it's there's so many things, even in my industry, in the entertainment business, of who created content or art, right? This is why, and we'll talk about this for a little bit, is NFTs, right? Non-fungible tokens. It's a big thing, right? Like if you're an artist or a musician or a filmmaker, and you create a piece of art or a piece of content, right? There's no real way of tracking sometimes. And sometimes it gets lost in the mix, whether it's a studio or whether it's a distributor or whatever, where you have the blockchain, it's public. You can see that you own that piece of content. And why this is so important is the royalties, the residual checks, right? And how you make a living on it. And I believe that that is where we're headed, where, you know, because everybody wants to follow that. I mean, right down to the sale of a house, right? And you pretty much are cutting out a lot of the middlemen in between, where it's like, hey, you want to sell the house? This is proof of ownership. Let's look on the blockchain. I want to sell you this. Here we go. Here's a transaction, right? And so I think, in my opinion, we're going to see a lot of that in the future. And we're going to see this technology being leveraged even more and more in the future. And when you've got, you mentioned credit card companies, when you got credit card companies now that are involved in making these transactions or help, you know, working alongside these cryptos, that's a big bullish sign. And I think when people look at it as, hey, you're investing in the technology, like I break it down this way. You've got Bitcoin, which is a currency, right? There's only 21 million ever made, which makes it rare, right? That's why people refer to it as the digital gold. It makes it rare. That's why it's so expensive, because only 21 million will ever exist on the planet. So you've got that store of wealth. And then you've got Ethereum, which is you're investing also in the technology behind it. And so those are the biggest differences to understand those two different platforms.
No, and Chris, I agree with you. And so it's really the use case that should drive the investment. And to your point, there's a developing use case for blockchain in art, in any transaction, in medical records, healthcare records. There's a big push right now for blockchain in healthcare, because just think about, every time you go to the physician, if you have to do multiple tests, typically there's no record of, if you take a test at hospital A and then go to hospital B, there's typically no communication between those two entities. A blockchain platform allows that to occur. And so your medical record now is part of the blockchain. So if anyone does a test or sees you as a patient, that goes part of that blockchain, and then the next person can look at the blockchain to see what's occurred. And so a lot of the healthcare companies and insurance companies are moving towards blockchain and how they engage with patients to make it more efficient.
Yeah, and hopefully that clears it up because of the technology, right? I mean, you know, because you've got a great use case there. I mean, there are people like in the whole DeFi world, right? Everything wants to be decentralized, and I get that, and I totally understand that, right? But there is some good use cases, and it can be stored. Yes, it's private blockchain, right? So we're not talking about all your medical records are going to be out in the public. It's only who has access to this, but at least it's put in one centralized location to help in the healthcare system, right? And so, so it's important to kind of recognize that. And I think, you know, there's going to be new use cases. What are your thoughts on NFTs as far as like art and stuff like that? Where do you see the future of that going?
I think this is probably one of the areas that has the most growth potential for creative people. Because ultimately, if you're creating something, and a lot of what we create now can be in a digital format. If you think of a musician even at a concert, what happens? That musician benefits from the first time that ticket is sold. But if it becomes an NFT, every time that ticket is exchanged with someone else, that concert, that musician can benefit from the royalties of that NFT. And that's the beauty of, for creative people, to be able to always have a royalty chain, if you will, that every time that exchanges hands with another buyer, you're able to benefit as the person that created that content.
See, this is mind-blowing because I don't think people realize the power behind this. Like, even just going to a concert, right, and your ticket is now an NFT, and you own that ticket, proof that you went to that concert, you then technically can resell that, right? So you could resell that, and then the artist will make money off of that ticket, off of the rent, because it's public on the blockchain.
Exactly.
I think there's just so many use cases for it.
And so what's happened is that particularly those artists that are more in the area of digital art, before NFTs, they really did not have a way of monetizing their art.
Right.
Because it's very difficult, as you know, on a digital platform.
Yep.
So this provides a monetization of digital art that's never existed before.
Yep. Well, this is great information. We're coming up to the top of our episode. And so, like, what I like to do is I always like to ask this one question, and I think I'm gonna gear this one a little bit towards finance, but if there was one piece of financial advice for that you would give out there to somebody, whether they're, you know, an individual or they're a business owner, what would that be?
Is to identify your true north. And what I mean by that, what drives you? Because what drives you would actually lead to your investment. So understand what really drives you, what motivates you, and that in and of itself, everything else flows.
I love that. Identifying your true north, finding out what drives you, what you're passionate about, and then go after that in the investment. Love that. Degas, thank you so much for coming on today's episode.
Thank you, Chris.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you like this episode, make sure you mash that like button and subscribe so you get the latest episodes. And if somebody else needs to hear it, please do them that favor and share it.